is from Luke chapter 6, verses 43 to 49, and can be found on 1,034 of the church Bibles, or page 21, if you've got this one. No good fruit bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on rock. When the flood came, the torrent struck that house, but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed, and its destruction was complete. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Thank you so much. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete. If you've got the Bible open, you'll notice that this is Luke 6. So the story of Jesus, he's finishing off a little period of teaching, and then this is where it finishes. Dunk. How about that for a finale to a sermon? Its destruction was complete. Thank you. Good night. And off he walks. He's making an invitation and a warning in both ways. He's inviting us into the fear or the anxiety of what it would be like to live in a house. And obviously, houses are more fragile in those days than they are nowadays. But this idea of a house, they all would have seen it in the around and about. They would have seen what it was like for the winds to come and the rain to come and for a house to be obliterated overnight. And he was saying, that was the experience. If you miss out on me, if you miss out on building your life on me, then the thing that you've built with your life, everything that you've built will come crashing down, and that would be a shame. And he doesn't want us to miss out on the security of his life. So he's offering this thing, but he offers it in the starkest of ways, and he leaves it hanging in the air. Its destruction would be complete. Don't do it. It's the kind of edge of Jesus' concern for us, because he loves us. So, hello, good to see you. Tonight we're looking at this idea of growing younger, wider, and deeper. And I'm just going to pray. Father God, as we look at this, these four words, growing, younger, wider, and deeper, I pray that your Spirit will come and take some of what I've said or going to say and turn it into something that would really mean something for our hearts and our lives. And particularly for us as a church at this time, not just for us individually, but also for us as a community, that we would hear what it is that you want to say to us. And I really ask that humbly, Father, that you would shape our thinking together, I pray. Amen. Amen. Thank you. So we're in this little vision series, which thank you for accepting that. You don't really have much choice in stuff, do you, sometimes? You know, like, oh, that's what we're doing, is it? No. So that's what it is, a little vision series. Three Sundays. Last week was a kind of like extra rule of life thing. About the difference between where we are and where we'd like to be. And I was saying this morning that some people have fed back to me that they felt quite challenged by the stuff that has been talked about. Is that fair to say that there's been some kind of tension between the kind of where we are and the where we might be? And for some of us, that has felt a bit overwhelming, particularly as there is challenge in the other bits of our lives as well. And so we're kind of caught not only with the challenge of church being challenging, which is one thing to cope with, but also life is challenging. And so we're kind of, that's a lot to cope with, isn't it? And sometimes we want church to be less challenging and comforting and So I'm sorry about that, but I'm also not sorry about it, because I want to present something that is beyond us where we've already got to. Not that where we've got to is a bad place, because look around us, it's not a bad place, is it? And look around you. I mean, look at these beautiful, amazing people. This is a good place to be, and what an amazing sound we made tonight, and what lovely, not lovely, that makes it too trite. What amazing worship. We were engaged in worship tonight, and that's a beautiful thing in and of itself. But there is that line in that song, there must be more than this. There is that sense of, maybe there's more to where we to what we've already experienced in God, both individually and corporately, that there's something deeper. So I've been trying to kind of suggest a few things, and therein lies the challenge. The first word was connect, that we might connect with Jesus, and I would love us just to be a church where the connections are many and varied and beautiful and wonderful, and they're deep as opposed to fragile connections. We're not kind of connected for a moment and then pulled apart, but rather we're deeply linked with each other and always forming new links with Jesus, with others, and with our community. And then the second word was participate, that we're all in, we're an all-in church, that we're fully dived in, we're wet, immersed church. Baptized church, that we're not a tiptoe kind of, oh, it's a bit cold in here sort of church, you know, that we're not tentative, but we throw ourselves into this baptism of life, into the immersion of the Spirit, and that we participate in the kingdom, in the church, and in the community. And really what I'm thinking there is that there are many ways that you can participate in church and in church life, and wouldn't it be great to grow in our participation as a family together, that more and more of us feel like we're fully engaged in this thing, that it feels like it's ours, not just theirs, whoever they are. And the last word tonight's is grow, and with that I've got three little words: deeper, wider, and younger. So just a bit on growth before we go any further. That growing is a sign of life, and it's an important thing. We're always growing, and it's one of the signs of life that is very important for living things. And it's a sign of change, isn't it? And change is a good thing. It doesn't always happen in the way that we want it to, but change is a good thing. It's a sign of things moving and a sign that we're alive, which is better than being dead, isn't it? Let's agree that together. You know, change may be difficult, but at least it means you're alive. That's good, isn't it? Yes, thank you. There's one person who's alive in the room, which is good. It's great. And he's silently rejoicing. I'm alive. That's good. That's good. So, but every organization and every family and every business and every school and every office and every organization is perfectly suited to get the results it's currently getting. And that's a truth that we can apply to our lives. And it just raises the question in our hearts, is there something that needs to change if we want different results? Because if we don't want different results, well, then we're perfectly suited to just keep doing the things you're doing and the way that you're doing them. They will achieve the same things. But if we want different results, then maybe something has to change, which is a good beginning of a conversation, isn't it, with ourselves about if we want to change, if we want to grow, well, what needs to change? It's an important first start, isn't it? But growth is a sign of life. There are other signs of life. The cells have order, and that's a sign of life. And we're sensitive to our environment around us. We reproduce. That's a sign of life. And with things that are alive are active. They have a metabolism. And they're held in balance. We have systems that hold us in balance all the time. Homeostasis, which is really important for us. So that's a sign of life. And adaption, evolution, is another sign of life. All of these things are signs of life. But growth is perhaps one of the most obvious signs of life, because you can see whether something's a living or not by whether it's growing. Have you got one of those plants in on your desk or in your house that is not growing right now? You know what I'm talking about. It's the opposite of growing. Yeah. Yeah, I got given one of those a little while back, an orchid. You know those beautiful orchids that from Marks and Spencer's or Sainsbury's or something like that. They look beautiful for 2 days, don't they? And then you touch them and they start dying. You know what I mean? So it's the opposite. Growth is a good thing. Growth is a good thing. And Jesus uses two images. One is the idea of plants, this idea of plants having fruit. And the other is one of buildings. And And really, the points are very similar, although they're slightly different. In the buildings one, it's the idea is that the foundations matter, and the other one is slightly different. But everybody is building something is really what I think Jesus is saying. Everyone's got a house of some kind, a life of some kind. The question is, what are we building, and what are we building it on? And because we all know that we're going to face some torrent from somewhere, and that's happening all the time, isn't it, in our personal lives and in our world around us. So how are we going to withstand that torrent? Or maybe the other way of putting it in Jesus' first story is growth is assumed in the first story that everyone's going to grow something. They may grow grumpiness or bitterness at the end of their lives. That may be the fruit of their lives, which would be a sad thing, wouldn't it? Thank you. Thank you for looking so sad when I said that. You kind of looked pained when I said that. Praying to God that that won't be you. That was what I picked up from that. That sense of wouldn't that be a terrible thing? But you can see it in others, can't you? You have noticed it in others where they seem to be growing and nurturing bitterness. And it does make you feel sad, doesn't it? So Jesus is assuming that we're all growing something. And the question is, what are we growing? And growing into what? And in which way are we growing? So these are important questions because growth is assumed because we're alive. And I also want to say that God wants us to grow as a church, and he wants us to grow individually. But growth is a challenging concept for us because growth always means change. And hey, I know this church is the only church that loves change, and all the others have struggled with it, but this church just loves change. No, but change is the hardest thing, isn't it? Change is always hard for us. So he wants us to grow, but the question is, in what way? In what way? So here are some ideas that we might grow in these particular kinds of ways. The first one is younger. And when I know that because people give me feedback in all sorts of different ways, sometimes verbally, but sometimes with their bodies, that I can tell when I say things, that it, whether it's hitting the ground or whether it's rebounding back. And I've said to various groups and to individuals, we ought to grow younger. And every time I've said it, I've felt like I've lost something, that it's not a good thing to say. It's like people agree with it in some sense, that they like the idea that we would become a slightly younger church. But they also want to clarify it. Immediately I say it. They want to say, I agree, but can we also talk about the old people, or can we make sure that we include the old people? Because don't say that we want to go younger, because that would make people feel bad. It would make them feel that they're not valued, or that they're not part of the ongoing story, or that they're being excluded in some way. So don't tell everyone that you want it to be younger. Pretend. They haven't actually said that, but that's what they're kind of implying. Don't make it explicit that you want to grow younger, because if you do, they'll get upset and they'll feel hurt. And people haven't said that just for themselves. They've said it on behalf of other people, and I think it's true. I was even talking to someone today, this morning, after the morning service, where I said the same thing, and they said, when you said younger, the first emotional hit of the word younger made me think, well, where do I fit into that, because I'm older? And they're not that old. I mean, just a few years older than me, not that old. Don't all laugh, that's not nice. But is it possible that we could grow younger and still like older people at the same time? Is it possible that we could grow younger and still were concerned for their needs? We still valued them and still wanted them to be as involved in the story as they could possibly be? I think it is. I think it is possible to both be, to grow younger and also to include and to value and to embrace and to make the use of every single person, however old they are, in their own body or actual age or whatever they feel like. And I was praying about it, and I was wondering about how to talk about it, because I felt like we ought to grow younger. It's an important thing, but I'm nervous about it, because every time I said it, it got a negative reaction. And I was praying about it upstairs in the chapel, and looking out the window just that way, and there's a fir tree over there on the side. And I love this particular fir tree is a great example of it. Fir trees, they grow on the fingertips, don't they? They grow these little stickle bricks, we call them in our household. Stickle bricks of... Did you have stickle bricks when you were younger? Yeah. They should bring those back. That was a good game, wasn't it? Stickle bricks. Anyway, stickle bricks of life at the end. And these grow. And then, of course, they change. And they're a beautiful colour, aren't they? The light green that then becomes dark green. And then next year, there's another light green finger stickle brick on the end of that afterwards. And they're growing. Trees are constantly growing younger as they get taller and they're reaching up to the light. But they're also growing older at the same time. And I wondered, and you can see the amount of seed, and this is like, you get the sense that this tree is a bit worried about its future. It's trying to reproduce quite a lot, don't you? And so I was thinking about this, about this tree. And I felt God say that it was, that the old is the source of the sap. It's the source of the energy and the water and the drive going forward, but it needs to go up to the right up to the top, in order for the growth to happen, for the young, for the fingers to be young and alive. So there's a place for the old. In fact, some of the limbs have fallen off a bit as gradually, and they've given way. And that's happened in our lives, isn't it? We stand on the shoulders of saints, or whatever the phrase is. People have come before us, but actually, here we are. We're the fingertips right now. It's our time in the sun. But they won't be long before we're not the fingertips. But we need somebody else to be the fingertips. And we need the energy and the life to be passing through us to them. Does that make sense? So we're both growing older. We need to be old, because otherwise we're just a small plant. We need to mature. But we need to be younger at the same time. I also want to say that younger means younger. It doesn't mean young. That we don't have to pretend to be young. You know what it's like when Dad tries to be young. It's embarrassing for everybody. And we don't need to be young. I mean, we just are who we are, and that's okay. But younger does mean younger. So if you're 70, it means people who are just a bit younger. If you're my age, it means, you know, people in their 30s, just a bit younger than me, you know, so... You're just a little bit younger. And of course, if you're 10, it means looking after someone who's 5, which is what they do, isn't it, 10-year-olds? They tend to look after the 5-year-olds and walk them around the playground or whatever it is. We have this thing about looking after those who are a bit smaller, a bit more. They need our care and love. And that's what I think this is about, us growing younger, about nurturing those who are younger than us. So this is a graph. You know, we tend to know people and like people who are 10 years either side of us. And this graph just kind of moves over as we get older, and our friends tend to grow older with us. Have you noticed? Yeah. And we tend to, but it's every now and again we reach out beyond these normal curves of our friendship groups, and we reach out to someone who's a lot older to us, and it's a joy. Or we reach out to someone who's a lot younger than us. It's a delight and a thrill. And those are beautiful moments. But the majority of our time is kept in this kind of normal curve of existence. But I think God is, so we need to make sure that there's, sometimes churches get stuck because the whole graph has gone up a bit and there's no way of going down again and we've lost, so we need to watch that. But I think God is calling us out of our boundaries, out of beyond ourselves, both young to old and also older to younger. So in over the next few weeks, I'm going to be inviting you to invest in the next generation. And by invest in the next generation, I mean invest, like if you had money. A few of you are now, I've lost the room again. I think I lost the room again. It's like, you notice that, and suddenly the energy went. You know, it's like that we actually invested in the next generation. And there's some ideas about how you might use our money together, that we could pool them together to actively invest in the next generation so that we become younger as a church. Just like the penguins or like the pine trees, invest in the young. They spend all their days doing it. There are 10,552 churches, Anglican churches in the UK. How many of them do you think have 100 children on Sunday worshipping as part of their... So that is 1,000, or is it 700, or 800? Oh, that's going up, isn't it? 700, is it 500, is it 400? Is it 200? Is it 100 churches out of 10,500? The answer is 30. 30 churches, Anglican churches, have the number of children that we have on a Sunday morning. The whole of the Anglican church is gradually just fading away because we're frightened of growing younger. We don't really know what that means, and we're thinking we've got to, well, we are going to have to change, but we're worried about it. And so we're looking after ourselves, but all the time the next generation is being lost, and someone else is taking hold of their lives, and they deserve a different foundation upon which to build their lives, I think. 170 of our churches, 1.6% of Anglican churches, have 50 kids on Sunday or more. 710 have more than 25. A third of them have no one under the age of 16. And two-thirds just have between 1 and 5. It's quite stark, isn't it? It's quite stark. I feel like there's a calling on this church to be something, to be a church that inhabits the space well and models what it is to be a young church, to continue to be a young church, to worry about it when we're not a young church, because the church of the future needs a young church. It needs to grow young leaders. And where will they come from? They will come from churches like ours, because we're in the top 0.2%. So we need to be that church who embraces this future, because out of our, we have seed. We have seed. And the future of the church depends on us in some way. So we must embrace this, I think, together. We must become younger. The next one is a bit easier. Can you hear the birds? So this is Sissinghurst. You know Sissinghurst, the garden in Sissinghurst in Kent. It's beautiful. And what happened in Sissinghurst was that they designed this little garden, and it had a bit of a field, but they thought they'd just create a little garden. The birds are really great, aren't they? I like that. That's good. And but they decided that they made one garden, and they made another garden, and then they made another garden, and they're all little gardens, but together they make a beautiful garden that you can walk through. Have you been there? Have you? It's fantastic. I learnt about this garden because I learnt about the white garden, because I had a very small garden, and it was an illustration of how to do a small garden, because really the garden is full of small gardens. And it said, just restrict the color palette and just do one thing really well. So, and it used this as a picture, and I discovered this beautiful book full of small gardens, and I had a tiny terraced house with a tiny patch of a garden, and I tried to make a white garden. I only bought white plants, and then a few blue ones crept in, and it became blue and white. But it was a really good idea, because it's beautiful, isn't it? But only a white garden isn't quite enough, because it's, whilst it's beautiful, it leaves you wishing for more. And so they created other gardens with a bit more flavor and color to them and texture to them. And it's beautiful, isn't it? It's fantastic. And you walk through them, and each one you walk into a different space, and you go, this is really beautiful. And I want us to be a church that is constantly looking to plant new gardens or open the vistas a little bit and to plant new things. But wider means more people. Would you agree? We already have a number of people, which is great, fantastic, and we can pat ourselves on the back for that, although we shouldn't really do that. But more people is hard, isn't it? Because more people means new people. Would you agree? And new people means different people. Would you agree with that? And different people means people unlike us. And that's where the rub is. Because we currently know each other a little bit, and that's good, isn't it? And we feel safe, and we like it. Have you been in a house group you know the difference between a house group that's just new and then a house group that's been together for a year, and then those that have been in a house group for 20 years. It's much harder to welcome new people into a house group that's been there for 20 years, isn't it? Because everyone's just so comfortable, and different people find it too different. They're not welcome. So this is a challenge for us, because we're actually quite comfortable with each other, and new people will disrupt the thing because they're different. And they think different. They're different ages. They're different backgrounds. Some of them will come with needs and problems. And they'll want your attention. And we come to church because we want somebody to pay attention to us. And suddenly the new person, well, we'll have to be the host. And that's a challenge for us, isn't it? So we like the idea of growing as a church, and who wouldn't want to be part of a growing church? That sounds good, doesn't it? But actually the cost to us is that it's always going to take us out of our comfort zone, which is really difficult for us, because every week would be a new experience for us rather than familiar. The wider we get, the more people we get, the more uncomfortable it gets at the same time, which is a challenge for us, isn't it? Because we like comfort. We're designed for it. But it's an invitation, because I think the cross is in the center for a reason, isn't it? Because he wanted it to be as wide as possible for as many people as possible, and it became very uncomfortable for him. And that's the reason why it looks like a cross in the end. For all of us, if you want to be my disciple, then you have to open your arms and die to yourself and keep opening yourself up to other people, which is a big challenge. And it's a big challenge, but it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Wider is a good thing, isn't it? Let's keep making new gardens. Let's plant some new gardens, maybe. A new congregation, a new church even. I don't know what God might lead us to. Let's add some new flowers to our existing garden. Because wider is more beautiful. Let's not restrict ourselves to who we already have, but let's see who else God wants to bring into the garden to be part of it. And the last word is deeper. And this is something that this is more individual. So the others you can apply to us as a church. You know, we want to grow younger. It's difficult to grow younger yourself. You can try as hard as you like, but that's not very easy. Although Viv is very keen to. She said to me the other day when I said, I want us to grow younger. She said, oh, that's fantastic. Richard wants to make me younger. This is fantastic. I want to be younger too. So you can try to be younger, but that won't happen. And it's probably not good to want to be wider. That's probably not a good thing. But it is a good thing to be deeper. And this is really about each one of us choosing to find a way of becoming deeply rooted into the life of Christ that is us. Jesus called it the kingdom of the heavens, or the kingdom of God. And he said, you call me, you say, Lord, Lord. These are things on your lips. You call me, Lord, Lord. Our God reigns, our God reigns, our God reigns. You call that. But there are some people who say these things and they don't give up time for practicing these things. And we need to grow deeper means orientating our lives around a completely different set of actions, practices, and beliefs. We were touching on this last week about the sunset, putting your deck chair out to catch the rays as it dips beneath the sun, the bottom of the sea, and the sun goes down. This is to orientate. We need to find ways, and our level of depth of our relationship is dependent on how much time we're giving to Jesus. It comes down to the word Jesus used in the passage twice. Did you notice it? It was in green. It was practice. He who practices my words. Which is a good word, isn't it? It's a good word. And practice requires time, isn't it? There's a book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. And you may have read it. It's a book about the people who have succeeded in life that we often think of as super gifted or incredibly lucky. And they've become rich and wealthy and famous, and everyone knows their names. But really, he analyzes them, and he discovers that actually the difference between them and us is really just a matter of time. That they have given themselves, these people are more fortunate, not because they are more fortunate, but because they have done more things again and again and again, and that somehow luck seems to fall on them more readily. And they become more skilled at something, and they more naturally, their natural gifts become amplified, and suddenly it's an escalating curve. And he says, the number of hours that you give to something will determine how successful you are. And if you give 10,000 hours to something like Ali has to playing the trumpet, probably, I don't know whether you've given 10,000 hours, but that repetitive kind of thing of doing something again and again and again makes you very skilled at it, very beautifully good at it. So do you remember Victoria Pendleton? She lost her race in the one Olympics, and then she practiced 4 days a week, hours after hour, cycling was all her life, and then she won the gold. It's no accident that it came after a period of intense training. Or Rebecca Adlington, the 19-year-old who started at age 12 swimming lengths, length after length after length, She became a double gold winner. 8,500 hours of swimming she'd done as a little kid. Or the Beatles. Do you remember them? We need to get younger, don't we? We often look at their story as if they burst onto the scene and it was all very easy for them and they just got together. But no, the story is that they were a band for many years and they went to Germany to practice and to perform because there were some army bases around Hamburg where they thought they could just get some free gigs and under their belt. And they did 1,200 gigs, which is more than most bands do in their entire lives nowadays. And it was after that that they came back to Britain. And they became, suddenly people noticed them because they'd become good in that period. They'd become something special. And it was basically time and hours that they'd given. Or Bill Gates, at the age of 12, I think, or 13, or maybe 14, he spent most of his days at the computer. He was fortunate to have a computer to work at. He was very fortunate. That was the fortune bit. But he wasn't the only kid to be around a computer, but he just stuck at it again and again and again. And it's perhaps no wonder that he became who we know him to be now. Or Mozart. Do you know that most of the work of Mozart was not done when he was a little kid, that precocious, little, talented, irritating child, but rather that it was the one who was mature that produced all the most majestic music, the one that spent hours composing all the way through his life, years after years after years, and then suddenly he begins to produce the most glorious music. It takes about 10,000 hours to become a grandmaster chess player, to become someone who can read the board without even really thinking about it. All of these things take time. Why would it be any different for us as disciples? We need to really grow deep. We need to orientate our lives around the life of Jesus, put him in the center every single day. So I'll finish with this because you can see this is a pretend. I'm mocking up a website at the moment trying to work out how to do it. And there's you drop down and it talks about getting in touch. This is connect button. This is the connect button. And get in touch and groups and Thanksgivings, weddings, center high, all that kind of easy, just making connections. The second button is participate. And that's throwing ourselves in. That's baptisms and Sunday groups and life groups and teams and missional communities and community impact like the Easter Project or giving. You know, that would be giving. Have I mentioned giving? It went out the room again. I felt the kind of energy go out the room again. And then the last one is to grow. How might we grow? And I've put down formation groups, teaching, or learning for the whole of life. And under that, you can see there's a whole load of other things, learning for the whole of life. And really, the idea behind that is that we might be able to host a number of learning experiences where we can really grow and go deeper. Emotional health, that we could grow in our emotional health. How to flourish in a marriage, how to get good with our money and finances, how to overcome addictions. Some of these we're already doing, but maybe we need to see ourselves as a growing community where we're always doing these things. And the last one is daily prayer. And I wonder how your daily prayer is, because really, the depth of our life with Jesus will depend on our relationship with him. So there are these four words: growing, growing younger, growing wider, and growing deeper. And I would love you to invest in that with your life, with your soul, and also your money to bring that along. The greatest issue facing the world today, with all its heartbreaking needs, is whether those who by professional culture are identified as Christians will become disciples, students, apprentices, practitioners of Jesus Christ, steadily learning from him how to live the life of the kingdom of heavens into every corner of human existence.